We bring on former Razorback head athletic trainer Dean Weber. Dean, how are you?
Rodney, how you doing?
Dino, what up, man?
Rodney.
Doing good.
Yep.
Doing good.
So why the name Rodney for Matt Jones?
It was, I don't know, you'll have to ask him. That was his nickname.
I had a creative writing class, and I wrote a cartoon about a little third grade African-American boy that his name is Rodney. He's the lead guy, and so we started calling everybody Rodney. It just took fire. And then there was Dino, was it Lindy Lindsay that had that?
Yeah, it was Lindy.
He had a big sign that said, "Run, Rodney, run." It took over.
Oh, yeah, he hung it from his the Lindsay suite up there.
Yeah.
It was actually painted on a sheet.
Right.
And even brought it to a couple of away games, I think.
It was our good luck charm. Dino, where was your first gig? I thought I remember you telling me that you were with Dean Smith at North Carolina. Was that
right,
you were telling me about
back
an airplane
the,
ride?
Back in the 60s and 1968, I believe. And, I went down there, and that was my first job. I was a couple years out of college and tried to teach a sixth grade for a year, and that I knew well that that wasn't the answer.
That's brave right there.
Yeah, and so it had been in college and high school, had been a little student trainer, you know. Well, not so little. I was pretty fat, actually. But got into that. Back then, if you had any interest at all in athletic training and you could tape a little bit or spell tape, you could probably get a job. And actually had two offers the same day from Duke and North Carolina. So that was pretty neat back then. But that was a good gig for about 5 years and a lot of great athletes. And we did good in basketball and football both, and so it was good.
We had Basil called in and was talking a little bit. You got to tell us something about Basil, and he said you probably have dreams of rolls of tape. That's how you go to sleep, you know, all the tape ankles you've taped. And he said something about Lucas that had the worst feet of any of them.
He said, yeah, he said that if there was a person that had the worst feet, you'd be able to tell us. But he said he thinks Lucas wins that hands down.
Hands down. Hands down, and I think everybody knows that too. I think they know that without looking at his feet. But clearly anybody that was there at the same time could tell you that. I mean, they were poor guy. Kind of felt sorry for him. But there were times I felt more sorry for myself having to tape them suckers.
Yeah, I bet. And I said this to Basil. I said, Dean, we could probably ask you how many rolls of tape you have used in your time, and you could probably tell us.
Well, no, I don't. Yeah, I'd have to do some ciphering there,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But it was quite a bit. You know, it was a fun time.
Talk a little bit about the different players that came through, the different eras with the coaches, and some of your memories that you've had as long as you've been there at Arkansas.
Well, Coach Bowles was the first one. And I was lucky enough to be around for his last 4 years. And we had one really good year in 75. It was a great year. And then, but those guys on that staff, you know, Harold Horton and Jimmy Johnson and Bill Lewis and those cats, they did a great job of recruiting now. Because when in 77, when Lou came in, you know, we had a great run there for about 3 years. We won 30 ball games in 3 years, and that's pretty good. Went to the Orange Bowl and the Sugar Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl, and we did pretty good. We had a good run there.
When we played South Carolina, Coach Nutt did his Lou Holtz impression. But why did Lou Holtz, when he was at Arkansas, have his team run out second also? You know, because you know how the visiting team is supposed to go out first, and he wouldn't go out that game. And I remember Coach Nutt not letting us go out until they went first.
Right, right. And it was just a little thing to to try to get under Lou's skin, but Lou's smart enough. He knew what was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's why he always said he hated to play in, as an opposing coach, he hated to play in Little Rock. Well, we used to play South Carolina here, and, well, as soon as he made that statement, we changed the game, mm-hmm. our South Carolina game, to Little Rock.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not so sure he didn't really want to do that anyway, because Little Rock playing at night when I first came here, and actually it'd be 40 years ago next month, and you know, we played four games in Little Rock, and three of them were at night, usually, and we only played three here. We played more down there because the seating capacity was more.
That was another thing I was going to ask you. You've seen that area grow in that stadium. Did you ever think that that stadium up there in Fayetteville would be as big and all the everything they have now that it is?
Never dreamed that it would look this way. And the new facilities that's going up, the new football complex, the stadium itself, you know, for so many years, until we closed it in there about 10 or 12 years ago at the end there, at the south end, you know, it still looked kind of like a battleship. You know, it was gray and you had some white on it, but it still kind of looked like a battleship. But once we closed that in and then the graphics and so forth, all that's been added over the years, it really looks like a football stadium now.
Dean, talk about that new football operations center and the training room that's going to be in there, the hydrotherapy pools that are going to be in there, the technology that's going to be at the disposal of the training staff now as opposed to what it was this past year.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I think it's going to be about 9,000 square feet as opposed to the about 2,000 square feet we have up there now. But, you know, when that building was constructed in 1975, that's all we had. Mm-hmm. You know, we had to do it in the end of the end zone. But now with the hydrotherapy and the technology and the new modalities, it's going to be something. There's a lot of water in that 9,000 square feet.
Yes.
A lot of water.
How have you seen the job of an athletic trainer change from when you started to where it is today?
There's more clearly there's more technology. Clearly there's been more advances made in the area of rehabilitation, you know, just in the last 5 years, not to mention the last 10 years, but that's the evolution of just about everything. I think probably the most significant thing that's occurred in athletic medicine, in my time as an athletic trainer, was two things. Certainly, the arthroscope, you know, where you could, and it was originally designed to be a diagnostic tool where you could actually make a small incision and look inside and see what damage there was instead of having to do an arthrogram or just opening up the joint so you would know what to do. And then it got to the point where you could operate with the arthroscope. And then probably the MRI when it was invented and came along, and it's used daily. You can't turn on the sports or read a sports page without seeing MRI somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, that's almost the gold standard now of diagnosing injuries. But still, you know, back in the 60s when I got started in this, you know, we've relied a lot on manual testing and evaluations and probably more the history. You know, if you told me you hurt your knee and you gave me the history of it and what happened and what's it feel like and so forth, and together with the manual evaluations, that was pretty much it. And then you decided what the next step of action was. You know, you didn't have an MRI or the not luxuries, but the advances of today or in the last 25 years.
Yeah, and you know, what was it like when, I believe it was Jack Crow, the year that he got fired after they lost
to the Citadel.
You know,
yeah.
You've been around some great years and some kind of not so good years as far as the wins and losses. Take us back to a little bit of that.
Well, certainly when, you know, probably the first 3 years when Lou was here was, I mean, that was just a fantastic time. It was a lot of fun, you know. That was going to BCS bowls before they were called BCS bowls, but I think one of the low points certainly was that the day that Jack lost his job, you know. But the Citadel was pretty good that year. They had a couple guys that ended up playing in the pros, and they don't have great teams very often, but we just happened to hit one of them. We've had some good times and some down times. I think this past year has probably been the most unusual.
I would agree with you with that.
With some of the things that have occurred, but yeah, I think we're on good footing again now, and I think Brett and his staff they've rounded up some good ones.
And talk about, you know, they were in the SWC, and Arkansas-Texas was a big rivalry game, and I don't know that Texas looked at us how it was a rivalry game, but I remember when we played Texas down in Austin and we had Jim Lindsay and Jerry Jones came in and talked to us, you could tell
right.
that it was a bigger moment. Do you believe that they need to get that back because they were in the SWC, but now they're in the SEC? And who is their rivalry now? Who, you know, who is that
well,
game for Arkansas?
Well, I think they've tried to, you know, back when Ken came to us in 84, we had played Ole Miss every year, and he being from Eastern Arkansas, I think he wanted it to be a rivalry again, but it just never got to that point. You know, we didn't have anybody from Mississippi, and it seemed like, and we had so many players from Texas that Texas was the big game. It was a lot bigger to us, I think, than it was to them, because we went so long. And to have a great rivalry, you've got to have pretty equal wins and losses
yeah.
with them. You know, you got to beat them some. And I think certainly, I know when we beat them down there in Austin with your old long legs and arm, it became a rivalry. It was pretty important to them then.
Yeah, I mean, they had,
yeah.
I think that Cedric Cobbs, either a couple years before, they beat him in the Cotton Bowl.
Right.
And then you played him again kind of a couple years later. But you
right.
could feel the difference in the atmosphere, because that was the only game I remember Jim Lindsay, Jerry Jones coming in there pregame and talking to
oh,
us.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we never had that before. And it was a – you know, it was a tremendous rivalry back in the 60s, you know, when those guys played, because it was either, Arkansas or Texas going to the Cotton Bowl just about every year. You know, every now and then somebody else would slip up there, like A&M maybe, not very often. But, you know, for the most part, it was Texas and Arkansas.
Yeah.
And then Texas kind of got the upper hand there a little bit, starting in the late 60s. You know, there was about 6 years in a row from the late 60s to like 73 that Texas went to the Cotton Bowl like six times in a row, you know, something like that. They won the league. But it was, it was a great playing Texas was always, always tremendous.
Former Arkansas head athletic trainer Dean Weber joining us here on Overtime on the Buzz Radio Network. Dean, what are some of the most gruesome injuries you ever saw from a football game?
Oh, one of the most gruesome, well, I'll say this, one of the scariest was Quinn Grovey when we were playing A&M here. He's the only player I've ever seen go down, and I thought he was dead on the sideline until he got out there. And probably one of the scariest was when Tracy Caldwell fractured his neck and really gave no indication that anything was wrong, and to think that, you know, we got him up and took him to the hospital with nothing more than a soft collar, and you know, he ended up having surgery, and he wore a halo for several months and came out of it fine. But you know, that's just kind of scary to think about. Mm-hmm. That you know, and there again, in the, you know, when you're on the field, you have to kind of rely on some evaluations. You can't really see in there. Probably the worst one was Al Herringer when he broke his leg during practice down on the grass field on these practice fields where this new complex is going. That was pretty that was pretty scary. And those players, they wanted to get off the field pretty quick.
Yeah,
you know,
I can
when you're
imagine.
Yeah, when your leg's going north and south and all of a sudden it goes east and west, it's not you know, that's not very pretty.
What do you think the biggest part as far as the difference in the athletes from the 70s and 80s till now? Do you think they would be able to compete and play at a high level, the athletes from then that could play now?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's more emphasis on speed and strength now. Now they'd have to get in condition. You know, those guys just weren't as strong as, you know, for the most part, you know, taken as a whole, they weren't as strong or as fast as the players we have now, is because it, you know, it just wasn't worked on as much.
Right.
You know, in those days, players didn't go to summer school. You couldn't pay for summer school, actually. And the seasons have, you know, the seasons have changed. When I got started in this business at North Carolina, you know, we had everybody report on August 28th. Now we're having a game on August 29th,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So, but, and school, and you played three games before, you had 3 weeks before your first game. First game wasn't until like the third week of September. But that was designed because, you know, kids had to work in the summer, and a lot of them were farmers, and they had to go home, and they had to get the crop in. They had to work on the farm. And then they came back in the fall after the crop was in, and you could play football and go to school. But it used to be like a September to June calendar, and now it's kind of an August.
Yeah.
It's an August-May type thing. And everybody's in summer school, and everybody trains all the time, and everybody lifts. And I mean, it's constant. It's just all the time.
Dean, we've got some Keithley Service Company live fan feedback. Someone wants us to ask you, Scott and Hunt, can you tell how many injuries might occur in a season by knowing the practice habits of the coach, like one-on-one compared to two-on-one drills or physical practices compared to no contact, just different coaching philosophies and injuries being greater for one during that season?
Well, I think early on, like if you have a new coaching staff, for instance, not necessarily this coaching staff, but any new coaching staff, you know, typically you're going to, and it depends on the experience of your players too, but to install new offenses and defenses, typically you're going to have to, I mean, you have to have contact to be able to play the offense and the defense the way it's supposed to be played. You just can't take that out of it. And depending on the experience of the players, you may have more injuries, you may have fewer. I know that having contact is necessary. If you go full speed, you have a better chance of not getting hurt. It's when you're not sure and you don't know exactly what you're doing, and that makes you slow down and think a little bit instead of reacting, then the chances of getting hurt are greater, particularly if you're on offense and the defenses come around a lot quicker, particularly in the spring, and they're going a little bit faster. Chances of an offensive guy getting hurt in that situation is a little bit more. But after a while, coaches are a lot smarter now. You know, you have to have enough contact the way that to be able to be successful.
Yeah, they've changed the practices up. Hey, Dino, we got to run. I was going to tell you, Lorenzo Robinson said what up.
All right. Thanks
for joining us today, Dino.
Hey, you betcha. Anytime. Good visiting with y'all.
Thanks, Dean. Appreciate it.